Thank you for listening to the Florida Community of Mindfulness's Dharma Talks. I'm Angela Parrish, Executive Director for FCM, and we're very happy to make these talks from our teacher, Fred Epsteiner, available to you. If you find this talk of benefit, please consider making a donation to support us so that we can continue to offer these recordings freely. You'll find a donation button on the talk section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. May you be happy and free from suffering.
So good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming out on this beautiful spring morning in Tampa. And what I want to speak to you about this morning is something that's very meaningful to me and that I suggested to our Florida Community Mindfulness Board when they met in retreat in December, and they have now adopted as an initiative for our community. So that's what I want to talk to you about. I want to begin with loving kindness, one of the earliest teachings of the Buddha. Is what's called the Metta Sutta. And I think probably I see Tim in the back. I have a feeling we're going to be, Tim has put it to music. We will be singing it at the end today when the children come in. But it's very central to practitioners of this way of how we want to relate to the world. You know, we need instruction. How do I relate to this world? And basically, in the Metta Sutta, what is set up in the Loving Kindness Sutra, what is set up is kind of a series of these, we might say, good wishes. May I be happy. May you be happy. May the world be happy. Right? May I be well. May you be well. May they be well. May I be free of suffering. May you be free of suffering. May the world be free of suffering. Is that clear? So that's kind of the aspiration basis for what we want for ourselves and we want for everyone. And that's quite wonderful. And quite fortunately, those types of good wishes for everyone are not just the property of Buddhism. There are many types of organizations, group, religious, non-religious people who have the same aspirations for the world and for the people in it. You know, where it gets a little more interesting is, well, how do you do that, you see? And if we're not careful, we can kind of have a spirituality that sounds very good and looks very good, but never kind of gets into the nitty-gritty of life, you see? And there's kind of this disconnect. The kind of Buddhism that we practice in our tradition is called engaged Buddhism, which means it's a Buddhism that does not exist or take place outside of the reality of the world and of everyday life, right? And so we want to always find ways to bring the teachings of the Buddha and bring our own experience in those teachings into the reality of our life, our relationships, our work, our society. Engage Buddhism. It's not a Buddhism over here in the that only exists in the meditation hall, or only exists on our cushion, or only exists in our world where we read and we study and we talk, but it's something that we live. So that's what we want to do. Now, how do you do that, you see? Again, because we're not the only ones who want to do that, who have these kind of wonderful wishes for ourselves and each other. And there are many ways, when we look around the world, that people are going about trying to achieve this noble goal for ourselves in the world. But one of the key, I would say, the one of the key kind of ways that a Buddhist looks at how to manifest things is according to the law of cause and effect, which is kind of a central law, how things operate in the world. Everything is a product of causes, and the effects of the causes then are causes for future effects. I mean, it's kind of simple. Is that clear? It's kind of scientific. It means like things just don't happen. Things happen because of causes, right? And so you find in the earliest of the Buddha's teachings, such as the Dhammapada or other teachings, the Buddha says things like, hatred will never cease by hatred. Hatred will only cease by love, right? Violence will never cease by violence. Violence will only cease by nonviolence. Is that clear? It sounds so simple, but yet it is kind of radical. That the idea that if there is something we want to create, we have to make the causes of it, right? We can't make a cause for an apple tree if we want a peach tree, right? Just nod your head if you're with me. Good. So you're with me. And so if we want to manifest love in the world, we can't do it by hate. If we want a world that's free of anger, we can't do it by getting angry at the people who are angry. We can't do it by hating the people who hate, right? We can't do it by aggressing against the people who are aggressive, because that's only, in terms of Buddhist way of seeing things, that's only creating more causes for more of the same, right? Apple seeds create apple trees. Peach seeds create peach trees. So when Buddhism looks at how do we manifest and create these things in ourselves, in the world, that we have to create the causes from them. They're not just going to happen, right? And they're certainly never going to happen. They're certainly never going to happen if the causes we're making in our life are causes that will create a different effect. I mean, this sounds simple, but stay with me, because there's a reason the world's in such a mess, you see. And it's very simple, because it's about causes and conditions and causes and effect. So we say, may I be happy? May you be happy? May the world and everyone in it be happy. May I be well, may you be well, may everybody in the world be well, right? Etc., free of suffering, you know. May the world be peaceful, right? May people treat each other in kindness. So these are the kind of things we say. May everybody treat each other in a good way. May we take care of each other like we're all of the same family. Does everybody know these kinds of thoughts? All right, so we all know it. But you see, how do you make the causes that'll make that happen? You see, that's the key thing. Now, many people, you think you do it by what? By following an ism and promulgating an ism, or by policy or procedures or voting, or you know what I mean, or you know, debating, or, you know, I mean, there are lots of ways that people go about advocating and all kinds of ways that in the world we say, this is the way we create this world. And certainly, I don't deny that that's me, but what's missing from that is this fundamental sense that if we want the world to be this kind of place, then it begins with me becoming this kind of person. Which gets a little dicey, because it's so much easier to kind of make demands on the world. I want you to be like this, and I want you to be like that, you see? Rather than going, well, first, why don't I experiment and see if I can be like that? You see? It's a lot harder. And most people skip over that. Right? So Thich Nhat Hanh, quite well known, I think most people, you know Thich Nhat Hanh, who first became known, back in the 60s for his stance on nonviolence and his relationship with Martin Luther King and the Vietnam War and all that. He said this radical thing: peace begins with me. Right? See, most of us would rather go, no, peace begins with you. See, I want you to be a peaceful person. I want you to be a peaceful world. You know, that's why I'm not peaceful, right? Because of you, right? Right? Oh, you mean there's some piece of personal responsibility here? That if I want a peaceful world, I have to first begin to become a peaceful person? If I want a world without hate, I've become somebody who's eradicated hate within me, anger within me, fear within me, jealousy within me, envy within me. Ooh, I don't know about that. You know, I like it much better the other way. Right? So again, this is not denying that, you know, we've created, since the Buddha's time, we have created these societies and these interconnections and these political systems, et cetera, that we work very much to kind of manifest these ideals. But we have to wonder why, with all the good manifestation and thoughts and ideas and intentions, we still have such suffering in this world. And maybe it has something to do with this very fundamental teaching. If you want a peaceful world, we have to become a peaceful person. If I want a healthy world, I have to become a healthy person. Right? And so now we have, we've kind of turned it around. And we say, I'm the seed of this better world. Right? And my job... And even if I'm doing other things out in society, is to make sure that I'm nourishing all the positive seeds in me so I become that person that I want the world to be. Right? We all want the world to be different. But are we really different? And how do you know the world can be different and other people can be different if we don't even know if we can be different? So it's a willingness to kind of take the aspiration and to put it back here first. Is that? So that's kind of how a way that we look at, you know, that we are the world. Each of us is the world. Each of us is a cell in the world. And our first responsibility, if we want the body of the world to be healthy, is to become a healthy cell in that world. So therefore, what do we do? Well, I can speak personally. I do this, right? We create this community, we create this center, we create all its programs. Why? To help people transform and become every positive thing, every wholesome thing they want to be. Because not only are we as individual cells in the world, but when we come together and create a community body, a Sangha body, we're creating this body in the world. Now, my concern is, I don't just want it to be words. I don't just want it to look a certain way. You know, I don't want it to just look good. I want it to be good. And so what I've asked the board this year is to really undertake a very practical initiative within our community, members of our community, people who aren't members but relate to our community and hopefully will move out, that we really want to help our community nourish their well-being in all the areas of their life. And what I want to use, and I've suggested to the board that we use as the template, is the Buddha's, ancient 2,600-year-old teaching on what are called the four nutriments. Now again, these teachings were developed in ancient times, so to speak, very different times, very different culture. And so I think while there are fundamentals of this teaching that are very instructive, we want to update them to live in the reality and the complexity of what life in America is like in 2018. So these four, let me spend a few minutes talking about these four nutriments. Are there any questions up to now? Is it kind of clear? Are there any questions on what's being suggested? So it's interesting this idea of it's a very simple teaching on these four nutriments. The idea is, and I think we can all relate to it, is because we understand it in a physical way. We understand that our physicalness for each of us to be alive, right? To continue to be alive, we need nourishment, right? We need something that nourishes our capacity of our physical body to be alive, right? We need nourishment. Just nod your head if you're with me. Okay, so it's very simple. So we understand that, but then we also understand that, so how do we get nourishment? We eat, right? We consume food. We also consume air, you know what I mean? We also consume water. So there are several major things that we consume to nourish the growth and the well-being of our body, okay? I'm just going to go very simple because it takes some leaps that we usually don't make. So In relationship to the nourishment, giving nourishment to our body in terms of what it consumed, we might say there are wholesome things that nourish it, the well-being and the health of our body, and there are unwholesome things, right? So nourishment has qualitative differences. There are things that are nourishing and there are things that aren't nourishing. And there are things that look nourishing, but they're really toxic, right? So we know, we breathe and we know quality of the air and, you know, so we all may be breathing, we all need breathe to live, but we can be breathing very polluted air, we could be breathing non-polluted air. We can be drinking polluted water or we can be drinking pure water, right? They give a different level of nourishment and well-being or lack of well-being to the body. Is that clear? And the same way we know now, much more than we knew 20, 30, 40 years ago, because it's very, very much in our face and people are really much more concerned about what they are eating than they did. But we know very much that the kinds of foods we eat, the types of food we eat, have a lot to do. Some foods look good, but they have no nourishment, right? They're not wholesome for the growth and development of our bodies. Other foods may not look that good, may not be looked that attractive, but they're very nourishing for our body, right? Is that clear? And so if we want to nourish our body, this vehicle we have for our minds, if we want it to be healthy, if we want it to be energetic, and if we want it to be as long-lived as it has possibility to be, we want to pay attention to how we nourish our bodies, right? And again, it has to do with consumption. And this may relate to things, how we exercise our bodies, but basically, you know, how do I nourish my body? What kind of nutrients am I really putting in it? So that's the first, and I think we all understand that because I think, you know, we all, somewhere along the line, probably took a little class or read something about nutrition. And the trees, remember, the pyramids and all that. So, you know, so we understand about nutrition. And now, of course, we are much, you know, we are able to educate ourselves much more about nutrition than past generations. Now, the second nutriment is probably new for many of us, and we can maybe think about this in terms of consumption, which I think is a more modern term. You know, nutriments is an old term, consumption is a newer term. But in the same way we are consuming through the foods we eat and the water we drink and the air we breathe, our body is consuming. In the same way, the Buddha said, the second way that we are receiving nutrition is through our senses. Okay, so now we're talking about, because we are not just physical bodies. The first one related to our physical body. The second one relates to now our mind. Oh. So we have to ask ourselves, and this is where it's new for many of us, is, oh, my mind is consuming also. Oh, I never saw it that way. And so the Buddha said the first way to look at nutrition or nutriments or nourishment or consumption is through our senses. We see, we hear, we smell, we taste, and we sense with our body. Right? These are our five senses. So this is really telling us, and our senses are really sort of the gateway to the world. If you could imagine having a body but no senses, your experience would be very limited. You probably wouldn't have any experiences. But because you can see and hear and smell and taste and feel, we enter the world. Well, now we have to ask ourselves, which is very interesting, and this is something we're going to be exploring over these coming months, is what kind of nourishment am I offering my eyes and my ears and my nose? Right? What am I looking at every day? What am I listening to every day? Are the things that I'm looking at and the things that I'm listening to and the things that I'm maybe talking about, right? Is it wholesome? Or is it unwholesome? Is it healthy? Is it unhealthy? Does it promote well-being within me or does it promote toxicity in me? Is that clear? Because we're now talking about our minds. And many of us, when we begin to meditate or become mindful or more self-aware, we may begin to wonder, how did I get this mind? I mean, I'm basically a decent human being. How did I get this mind, which is kind of often is not thinking, you know, if we reflect on what we think about all day, in the privacy of our own minds, what we think about all day, just in our little inner conversation with ourselves, and how we feel all day, we may go, see, it's really not congruent with the kind of the way I show up in the world and want to see myself. But how did we get these minds? Well, we have been consuming since infancy. And one of the main ways, the second big way we've been consuming is through what we see, what we watch, what we hear, right? And again, in this day and age, especially in the last several decades, our capacity, because of electronics and media and all these things that you know about in the digital age, our capacity to be exposed to see and hear and gather information through our seeing and hearing is voluminous, Right? We are, our eyes, our ears, we're constantly consuming through these. And what the Buddha said is, are the things we're consuming through our five senses conducive to wholesomeness, to well-being, to peace? Does it nurture love? Does it nurture kindness? Does it nurture understanding? Or, what I'm taking in through my five senses, especially in this digital age, stuff that actually sabotages that desire upon myself. Is that clear? So, sense impressions, you know, am I, you know, what am I looking at? You know, somebody asks people, you know, do you notice like it's a beautiful day today? And people go, oh no, I've been so concerned about what's going on in Washington. I have no, you know, oh. It's like, you know, kind of like, Fred, get real. You know, don't you, you know. You see, but what are you nourishing yourself with today? Are you nourishing yourself with things that are wholesome? Or are you nourishing yourself with things that are unwholesome? And again, it depends on, again, understanding it that way. You know, what are we listening to? What are we smelling? Do we use our five senses as avenues to nourish wholesomeness and well-being? You know, do we look at beauty or do we look at ugliness? What are we taking in through these? Sometimes the five senses are called the five windows or the five doors. They are, if you think about windows let us see the world. What are we looking at through our five senses all day? So to be aware that we are constantly, from the minute we get up to the moment that we go to bed, our five senses are alive. And they are processing information. They are processing impressions. And am I aware of that? That input, that consumption through my five senses is conditioning me. It's not benign. It's not just passing through. That's not how the mind works. The mind holds impressions of everything. In what's called the storehouse consciousness. We hold the impressions of everything. And again, as human beings, our five senses are constantly consuming impressions. Is that clear? Okay, so we're just kind of getting an overview today. The third area of nutrition, of nourishment for the mind, is what the Buddha called volition, intention. So it's very interesting. Most of us would never think of that. Okay. So what he's saying is, well, where is our mind directed all day? You know, if we have intention, if we have aspiration, if we have will, you know, if we, you know, where is it directed toward? You see? Is it directed toward things that are nourishing? Because again, we are not blind puppets. We do have will, right? We can direct our life in many different directions. So just to look at volition and intention as one of the main ways we nourish ourselves. You know, where's my intention all day? Is my intention to be the most handsome guy in the room? And is that what I'm concerned about all day? How I look? You know, does that give me peace of mind? Right? Does that nourish me? Or does it not? You see, for some reason I picked that. But does that, is that... Luckily, I don't have that one, but... but I was a teenager once, so I mean, must be, the seeds must be there. Where is my volition in this life? Is it to always, you know, is it about money? Is it about security? Is it about, you know, getting somebody to like me, or getting to feel worthwhile, or getting to be noticed, or getting to be, you see what I'm saying? Where am I directing my mind all day? Both on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour level, but also in the big picture, is it toward pettiness, meaninglessness, or actually toxicity? You know, I mean, I remember when I was young, you used to meet people at work, you know, people you work with, you know, and like from Tuesday on, their whole intention is to get through the week so they can get to, you know, happy hour on Friday. I mean, that was like, right? Or getting to the weekend, you know, I mean, we all know that, right? I mean, that's their intention. You know, that's where they're directing, you know, to get through work to get to the weekend, right? You know, what is that kind of intentionality, if that's where your energy is, do to you? You know, is that really going to nourish you and make you happy? You see, where are we directing our intention in life? You know, if my intention in life is to get everybody to notice me, right? What does that do for my mind? That's my intention. I'm just using that as an example. But is you clear? So we have to, the Buddha saying, and of course, obviously, you know, in let's say the Buddhist way, you know, there are sort of intentions that are very noble, such as what? Well, my intention today is to, you know, be kind. My intention today is to help as many people as I can. Right? My intention today is to be more loving, to be more patient. My intention today is not give vent to anger. My intention today is to only speak kindly and constructively to people. You see, those are intentions too. But they lead to wholesomeness. They lead to happiness. They lead to peace in mind. They actually lead to a better world. So, I mean, I'm just kind of making it very personal, but many of these things, including, you know, what we eat and how we consume, have wider implications for our world. But so, please see that, you know, intentions are a way we nourish ourselves. So Brian has an intention always to be noticed. So even though I'm a... and he just succeeded. So very good. Thank you, Brian. So again, these get a little trickier, do you understand, when you get into sense impressions and volition. But I think you understand, you know, we are nourished, we are consuming, our mind is consuming by its intentions. That's what it's eating. And we have to look at whether our intentions, again, for hour by hour, day by day, for a lifetime, are really nutritious, or whether they are non-nutritious, or whether they're actually toxic, right? And you've heard me say before, you know, just like there is junk food, food that looks good, but it basically is devoid of any nutritional value, right? It's junk food. In our world today, and especially in the digital age, there are so many things that we can set our intention and our volition on that are basically meaningless or junk experience. They're fillers. You know, like a lot of junk food, they're just fillers. They're just filled with a lot of salt and sugar and things to, but it's basically just fillers in there, right? There's nothing nutritious in that food. And there's many experiences these days that are so easily available to us that are the same way. We look forward to these things, watching these things, you know, learning these things. You can endlessly gather information on the internet. One thing leads to another, and you know, and you never even thought of it, but then it's suggested, if you're interested in this, you may be interested in that. And before you know it, what? And I'm making a full confession. I mean, it's just bizarre. You know, you go on the internet to do one thing, and before you know it, it's 45 minutes later, and they've just enticed you with things you never even thought about or cared about. But now you're gathering information, right? And at the end of it, you go, what? I just wasted an hour, you see? So, you know, what's our intention? You see what I'm saying? In this digital age, I think this one is even more central and, in a certain sense, more difficult because it's the level of sophistication of the engineers who are developing these products, and we know now in articles and everything that they are they know what they're doing. They know about psychological addiction, and so, you know, we have to be very careful with our intention and volition. And the last one is consciousness. Okay. So consciousness is about the mind now, very clearly about the mind. And just to say it simply is, what am I thinking about? What kind of mind state is in my mind right now? Okay. So this gets into very clearly another way of looking at consumption. So when we are, having happy, loving, kind thoughts, we are what? We might say our mind is consuming a positive mind state. So you see, it's eating it. And when the mind eats a positive mind state, it grows that positive mind state. That's how we transform. So when our mind is consuming or eating positive thinking, loving thoughts, kind thoughts, patient thoughts, understanding thoughts, right? That's what's creating the consciousness. That's what's creating our mind's consciousness, that kind of overall consciousness that we show up with in the world, right? So we know that human beings who have very positive minds, minds that are filled with only positive ways of being and thinking, tend to be people whose minds are very light, very open, very spacious, right? It's a quality of mind. How did they get that way? Consumption. Consumption. Consumption of sensory experiences, consumption of volition, and now ultimately consumption of mind states. On the other hand, when we are angry, resentful, hurt, everybody know what I'm talking about, worried, anxious, envious, depressed, despairing, right? Think about, in that moment, this is what your mind is consuming. And if you are a ruminator, like you just don't do it one time, if it's good one time, you got to do it at least another 50 or 100. Each time you go through that, you are consuming an unwholesome, an afflictive, a negative mind state. And that is building your consciousness. So if you wonder, again, how you got the mind you got, it's not by accident. It's by consumption. It's by, we have not understood that when we are cultivating mind states, positive or negative, we are creating the substance of our minds. In the same way, if we live on junk food, right, outwardly we may look normal, but inwardly, what's going to happen to our organs, to our tissue, to our immune system, to our hearts, to our, right? Disease. In the same way, because of the way our mind is consuming internally, cannot be seen, we are creating our, you know, we are nourishing or not nourishing our minds. So this is really a key one, right? And so these teachings of the Buddha on the four nutriments, and again, we can say a lot more about them, are essential, I think, especially for us. Now, when I say us, I mean lay people. Okay? And we have to understand that much of the Buddha's teachings, going back to the Buddha, and really up to fairly recently, was written down and created by monastics. Okay? And what's the monastic lifestyle? They have renounced, you know, they've renounced the world of the sense impressions, and they live in very isolated areas, you know, where their life is very isolated, right, from a lot of these things. And they create an environment that that is about cultivating wholesomeness. And because of their distance from the unwholesome, right, it can sort of work, right? The problem is, that's not our life, is it? We live in the world, right? And we live in the world where the sense impressions, all the ways that life is trying to get us to want this and need this and, you know, direct our energy here, as well as what's being constantly projected into our consciousness, right, is we're bombarded. You know, we don't live in a safe environment. Is that clear? We don't live in an isolated, we're lay people. So to me, this teaching, which is really not a very central teaching in Buddhism, but I think really Thich Nhat Hanh has really kind of, he picked this one up in his lifetime, and he's really taught it a lot for decades, because I think this is an ancient Buddhist teaching which has so much meaning for us, right? In the world we live in. So we need to begin to see that these four nutritions and how we go about, you know, providing it to ourselves and to others. We don't live in isolation. So first we got to get it together ourselves. Then we have relationships. We have family. We have friends. And we have a society. So we go back to where we started. We want the world to be well, to be healthy, don't we? I mean, does anybody want everybody in the world to be unhealthy? We laugh, right? But no, we don't. That's our wish, right? We'd like everybody in the world to be healthy. We'd like everybody in the world to be happy. We'd like everybody in the world to be free of suffering, right? We'd like everybody in the world to only have wholesome emotions, wouldn't we? And no longer have afflictive emotions, right? We want all these things. Well, are we willing to do them ourselves first? Or simultaneously, at least? And to me, that is so important. So that's why I suggested to the board that we undertake this initiative this year of kind of concretizing these four nutriments into a way to help our community, not by imposing, all right, 1 hour of internet a day, you know, and only be a vegan, and all, you know what I mean? I know I'm not going to impose anything, but I really want the community to begin to look at these kinds of issues in all the areas of our life, and to just begin to ask a series of questions, an introspective questions, to we begin to look at our lifestyle and our patterns of consumption in all these four areas, so we can see ourselves what's going on, and also to see there are other alternatives and ways. So it's really kind of, again, I really want each of us as individuals to be healthy members of our community as much as we can. We want our community to stand for something in this world. So when we go out into the world, it's not just superficial, but we're actually living it, right? You know, one area that I think, and it's interesting because, you know, so much of kind of modern research, you know, in the area of health and well-being, physical and mental, is supporting so many of the things that have always been part of our teaching, you know. Like all of a sudden, you know, research is showing that mindfulness is actually good for people. You see? 2,600 years of practice within the Buddhist tradition, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But, you know, a little research study with 25 college students goes, wow, that's... You know, mindfulness is good. And now they're actually researching what? Loving kindness and compassion. I mean, can you believe it? I mean, I read these things, and there's like this state-of-the-art research where they're, again, mostly college students, showing that college students who, you know, do 25 minutes of loving kindness, compassion meditation a day, their minds actually get happier. They're more peaceful. Lo and behold. You know, so it's kind of wonderful these days that this kind of going on for those people who kind of need that first. But another area that I think is important is that we look at, and I think Thich Nhat Hanh has been really wonderful there, is again, we look at, you know, how do we spend our leisure time? I mean, I think that's a real challenge for people in this busy life. You know, when I'm off, do I spend my time doing things that are nourishing? Or am I just what? You know, we used to say sitting in front of the boob tube, but you don't say that anymore, do you? I mean, right? Couch potatoes, boobs, that dates me. But what? Binge watching, or, and thank you, Angie. You know what I mean? But again, you know, especially since we are so much busier these days, it's so it seems, when we have off time, do we do things that really nourish us and restore us? Or do we do things that are kind of meaningless that just, well, you understand what I mean. And the other area is relationships, you know, which I think, again, we need to look at. It is very clear from the research, but we all know this, that people who tend to have positive relationships in their life, that have connections, human connections in their life, right, tend to be healthier, happier, and live longer, right? Is that clear? And so we need to look at our relationships, our relationship with ourselves. A lot of people have a toxic relationship with themselves, so I think that's a good place to begin. But, you know, to look at our relationships with others. And do we have relationships with other people? And are they qualitative? In other words, do they nourish me? And do I nourish them? Which is, again, not often the way we look at relationships, do we? In terms of this idea of nourishment. Am I nourished by this relationship? And do I nourish the others in my relationships? Because nourishment, meaning nourished by positive connections, comes back on us. It conditions our mind, right? If we do not have a lot of connections in life, and if whatever connections we have, they are not healthy, they are not nourishing, and if they're the opposite, right? If they're unhealthy, unwholesome, and even toxic, that is also conditioning us. You see? And so if we're not looking at these things, we might think that the way our... Is that clear? I mean, a lot of people... See, in Buddhism, everything is causes and conditions. You know, you're not a permanent, solid thing. each of us is the way we are because only because of causes and conditions. Actually, in Buddhism, the fundamental teaching is we're all Buddhas. We're all Buddhas. We all are Buddhas. We all have this pure, immaculate mind. That's who we are, right? But because we have been consuming junk, because we've been consuming so much unwholesomeness, we've lost this connection, you see. We've become unhealthy. And so we want to become healthy again. And we do that by just simply changing our consumption patterns in the way I'm talking, right? We are who we are because of the way we've been consuming. Consuming what? Well, the edible side of life is obvious, but through our senses, right, through our intentions, our volitions, and most importantly, because of the mind states that we have consuming, we have created this mind. Is that clear? And that's all. There's nothing more than that. Oh, well, that's simple, isn't it? If I don't like what I see, what do? Redecorate. Redecorate this mind. And luckily, we have these teachings and these practices that help us do that, that help us guide us in wholesome nourishment of this mind and body. Is that clear? And so there is nobody who is listening to me now who doesn't have the capacity of becoming a healthy, wholesome human being, capable of love, capable of receiving love and giving love, right? I mean, is that what does the world lack now? The world lacks healthy people, right? I mean, when we look at what's going on in Washington, what do we see? Unhealthy people, right? People who live from unwholesomeness on all sides of the aisle. Right? Who don't know how to be happy. I mean, sometimes I look at these, you know, they when they pass bills and they all kind of line up for the picture, I look at them and I go, wow, what a bunch of unhealthy looking people. You know, no wonder they do what they do. Right? I mean, just take a look at them. I mean, you wonder, do they ever have wholesome thoughts? Loving thoughts, compassionate thoughts, kind thoughts? I don't know. They're so busy, right? You see? So this is kind of ancient teaching. And it's very simple, but I think it's very profound. So I'm hoping in this coming year, our community, you know, again, not in any kind of orthodox way or imposition, but that each of us together and as a community can look into all these various areas of our lives and really, you know, really take an inventory about, you know, how we are in all these areas, and then also share ideas about how in each of these areas we can become, you know, that in all these areas, these four areas, you know, that we can only be taking in nutritious impressions, right? Cultivating nutritious and nourishing mind states. Part of that is knowing when we're not. You know, I mean, just that simple. Stop. What am I doing right now? Right? I'm consuming anger. I'm consuming resentment. What's going to be the effect of that? Only one thing. You can be sure that in the future, you will continue to have more anger and resentment. That's guaranteed. Because that's how you're nourishing yourself. Right? If my whole life's about hurt and envy, and that's what I'm nourishing, I'm going to continue to have it. There is no doubt. Don't be surprised that it arises. Okay? That's how we've been nourishing ourselves. Is that clear? Fear, anxiety, worry, I mean, all these things we do. Despair, sadness, you know, etc. Impatience, irritation, even the little things, you know, impatience. No, irritation. You know, every time you're irritated, you can be sure you are making the cause that you will be irritated by something in the future. It doesn't just come out of nowhere, it comes out of us. I was talking to somebody the other day, and it was like, no. It's not that the situation is causing you to be dissatisfied. It doesn't work that way. In your mind, you have the seeds of dissatisfaction, and it's always looking around the world to find something to be dissatisfied about. Is that clear? That's the teaching. It's all coming from our minds. You see? If you notice, you tend to be dissatisfied with things a lot. It's because you've been cultivating the mind of dissatisfaction, even though you think you're right. But the mind of dissatisfaction is unwholesome. It is not conducive to happiness, to peace of mind, to loving hearts, to openness, right? So we need to kind of, anyhow, we'll be doing this. We have a family program today, so I think the children will be coming in just a few minutes. I mean, just, again, we'll be talking more about this in the coming weeks, in months. I mean, anything just not clear about what's been said? Yeah, it's kind of simple. Have you known all this already? Have I just been wasting your time this morning? Anyhow, you know, things like this, it's good to hear again. Right? I mean, I'm happy to hear it again, too. It's good for me. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You see something wrong, I mean, you can turn your face and go to the nice place, but you don't see it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we only have a minute, so thank you for saying that. I'm not saying, you know, I mean, we're talking about mind states that we cultivate, you see. You know, we're not talking about situations. You know, are there things in this, I mean, is some time to be anxious about something or scared about something when there's a real threat? Yeah, it's not like, oh. But I'm talking about this chronic situation that we have, you see, which has nothing to do with these bigger issues. Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up. So yeah, so I mean, there are things in the world where that's horrible, the way people treat each other. And I have a little momentary self-righteous anger that mobilizes you. But people don't mobilize. They stay stuck in the anger. They stay stuck in the dissatisfaction, which only cripples you, right? That's what's going on these days. You know, people watch the news every day. They go, you know, they talk to their friends. It's horrible. You know what I mean? And all it's doing is what? Producing toxins in yourself. Yeah, you know, if you're angry about something, go do something. But do it because you want to do good in the world. You see, what's your mind state? You know, I mean, this is not new. I mean, in our own day, we Gandhi and Martin Luther King, people have said the same thing. It's your mind state. Right? You know? If we just put more anger into the world, more hatred into the world, this world's going to, you know, cause and effect. And that's hard, because for most people, they only get mobilized by anger. You know, how about, you know, love is a very powerful emotion. And a better emotion to change the world. You want to change the world because you love the people in the world. Right? You want to protect the planet because you love the planet. It's so beautiful and it's so nourishing. Right? So we can act heroically from positive emotions, but most people in our life, they think they can only act from negativity, from anger, from fear. So I'm glad you brought that up, right? So I'm not, no, this is not about let's go bliss out and everything's happy and everything's wonderful and Yeah, this is not that, okay? So, but I'm talking very personally here, just about, you know. So, yeah, there are things in life to be dissatisfied about. But the energy has to go into positive change. But we get stuck in this dissatisfaction. I'm just talking about people who are just always dissatisfied. Satisfied with their dinner, they're dissatisfied with their wife, they're dissatisfied with their children, they're dissatisfied with the politics, the people, you know, they're just always dissatisfied. It's a dissatisfied mind. Okay? Exactly. Thank you. That was a good point.